Hi, welcome to the LA Podcast. This is a podcast about LA. My name is Hayes Davenport.
And I'm Scott Frazier.
As far as I'm concerned, that's all we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much pure confidentiality on our end.
Yeah, I don't. What would these people think? They have to know everything about us?
The premise of the show is that you should know more about LA.
Thank you.
And nothing in particular about us, I guess.
We like the city. We talk about the city a lot. There, it's hard to get local news. It's hard to follow what's going on in LA. There's not a lot of...
LA is kind of peculiar because we are a media capital of the world, yep. But there is sort of a lack of information about the inward-facing local news,
yep.
What it's like to be here and what affects the people who live here on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's because we face out to the rest of the country.
Yeah, so clearly there's no need to deal with anything that happens here.
And there's kind of a stain on your reputation if you work on local stuff.
A stain.
And so Scott and I are saying, stain us. Yeah. Cover us with the stain.
Right. Void, you have been filled by us. Yeah.
We want to start by talking about some very special elections that we have coming up in Los Angeles.
Three of them.
So... just a very basic rundown. California has a state house and a Senate, just like America does.
Yes. Our lower house is called the Assembly.
It's called the Assembly, yes. And just like America's house, these people commit sex crimes.
So many.
They commit sex crimes all over town. And... these are all in LA.
And on the road.
Yes, that's right. Some of them go on vacation and then do a sex crime. All of these special, like all of these recent, so there are actually five recent scandals, but only three special have happened elections. Far enough ago for them to have scheduled a special election to replace the people that got kicked out. And one of them is not necessarily a scandal, we should say. Maybe we should start with that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, great. Right. So, Assembly District 54, Century City, mm-hmm. Palms, Westwood, Culver City,
right. Crenshaw,
like Ladera Heights, Baldwin Hills, Crenshaw,
yep.
Leimert Park, a lot of wealthy West Side neighborhoods, some wealthy right. white neighborhoods, some wealthy black neighborhoods, some
middle class black neighborhoods,
some middle class white neighborhoods.
Right.
The former assemblyman for the district was Sebastian Ridley Thomas.
Yep. Son of supervisor, county supervisor, Mark Ridley Thomas.
Mark Ridley Thomas, a very powerful man.
Extremely powerful man. Very powerful figure in the black community locally. He's now in his final term, I believe, mm-hmm. as county supervisor. Prior to that, he was a city council member. He was in state legislature, too, and that family just carries a lot of weight here.
Yeah.
Especially in the black community.
And so his son, Sebastian, was elected assembly member a couple years ago, at I think 29. Young.
Very young.
He stepped down very abruptly for health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said, the information that he gave was that he has had six surgeries
right.
this year. But no more information than that on what the surgeries were on or anything. I noticed you putting your microphone away, but I do want to, you know.
I want to just let you flush this out. Because I know you have
this is called setting
a
the
journey
tone.
To take here.
No, I am not going to dig into any of the... Look. It's an obvious thing that will happen if you just say, I'm stepping down from my position in 2 days.
Please don't ask questions.
Which, yes, no questions. People are going to come up with theories for what's going on.
It's human nature.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I...
You have an abundance of human nature, so you have a lot of theories.
So, too much human nature.
Too much.
And so, I sometimes talk to people who know a little bit about these things, and everyone, you know, has their theory of what happened, but everyone has a different theory.
Right.
And now I have a total of six.
Right.
Including the original one, well, you know, the health issues.
Including the original.
The original, yes, we'll count theory. That as a theory. Yes. Including Sebastian Riley Thomas's theory.
He doesn't know. I mean, he doesn't necessarily know why this is all. He can have a theory, too.
Yes. But it's all, like, I'm so amazing to me. Every time I brought it up, I'll list all the theories I've heard up until that point, and nobody ever says, oh, yeah, I heard that one, or, like, one of those. They always say, no, I heard this.
Right.
Which is a different thing.
And at which point is just like letting the rumor mill run completely wild worse than just telling people what's actually going on?
Because I guess it depends on what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, yes, it kind of makes you think, wow, maybe it's really something terrible.
I know. But I think it's totally fine to, like, if you want people to respect your privacy, too.
Of course.
But you're also a public figure.
Right.
So, look. He's out of office now. I mean, if he's going to be out of politics forever, then it doesn't really matter. If he just wants to go back into private life, he's right, allowed to do that. So anyway, he is no longer in office. The front runner to take his position is a woman named Sydney Kamlager. Lager, I don't know. Here's the thing that we're going to encounter. You don't really hear these names very often. If you are just like following LA politics, you read them.
Yeah.
I do not know how to pronounce this woman's last name, but she has the endorsement of the California Democratic Party, which is very important. She used to be a board member. She is a board member for the LA Community College District. She also used to work for Delroy Lindo's theater company. Mm-hmm. Do you know? I mostly think of him as the cop in Gone in 60 Seconds, the new one.
The new 60 Second. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've seen it at least.
Sure. From, I think, more than I would say the year 2000.
Right. Yeah. Nicolas Cage.
A little closer.
Okay. Yeah. I've definitely seen it. Know the cop. And
yeah,
the association of the two is now more confusing to me, I think.
Yeah, I mean that's another weird thing about a lot of local LA politicians is they have at some point kind of brushed up against the entertainment industry.
Yeah,
a lot of them came out here for that.
Right. There's a lot of back and forth in a way that I do get a considerable amount of my LA news from entertainment podcasts that I listen to, or comedians podcasts that I listen to, and I'm just like, oh yeah, so and so's doing something I would have never known if I hadn't listened to what is essentially just like gossip among people who all know each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
you know, Bob Blumenfield, the city councilman, wrote a...
I didn't realize there was more to the question.
No. He wrote a TV spec.
Okay.
He used to work in D.C. He wrote a spec about like the inner workings of, like, you know, young people in D.C. running around, and came out to L.A. to develop this show. And then the West Wing came around and ate his lunch.
Instead, he got elected to the highest paid city office in the country.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting. there's another interesting candidate in this in the 54th Assembly District, Steve Dunwoody. Mm-hmm. He is the California director for the Vet Voice Foundation. He is definitely running from the left,
right,
to Sydney Kamlager. He is a Medicare for All advocate. He really is not a friend to the oil and gas industry.
Yeah, and that's one of the main things that he has gone after is that this district, AD 54, has the largest urban oil field anywhere in the U.S. He's made that kind of a central focus. If you've driven on La Brea south of the 10, you've probably seen all of the oil derricks. That's kind of what he focuses on in his campaign rhetoric. But he does have, as you said, the left-leaning vote. He's very popular among the DSA, whereas Sydney Kamlager has the more establishment, not just the endorsement of the Democratic caucus, but also of the state legislature's Black caucus.
But these assembly districts can get pretty wide open.
Right.
Because they're just not many people vote in these. It's going to be decided by not that many votes.
Right. And of course, we do the top two primary where it doesn't matter what party you're in because we really only have one party.
Yes.
So we're going to very, very likely see a competitive race between two people.
Yes.
And then they're going to have, they're going to be running for the same seat likely again very
right.
soon.
Unless one candidate gets above a majority, in which case that candidate wins. Outright.
For the special election, yeah.
So, this is what's so crazy about this special election. Here's what happens. This is nuts. For all of these special elections, there's the primary on April 3rd.
Right.
That's the first special election.
Yep.
If nobody gets above 50% in that special election, it goes to a runoff, which is on June 5th.
Yep.
And on June 5th, at the same time, so that election, whoever wins that June 5th election will be the assembly member for the rest of the year 2018.
Yep. Quite a prize.
Yes. At the same time, on June 5th,
yep.
is a primary for these same districts.
The same seats.
For these same seats.
Yep.
For the years 2019 and 2020.
LA politics is fun. That's fun to
so stupid
me.
In a very fun way.
In a fun way that is really good at generating sub 10% voter turnout.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so good at churning out only the most dedicated voters.
Because here's what will probably happen in at least one of these districts is there will be a runoff on June 5th.
Right.
So someone will be running in the runoff
yep.
at the same time as they're running in the primary for the same seat.
Which is especially relevant for Steve Dunwoody, who
yes.
will not actually be in the special election.
So this is his big hurdle as a candidate, is that he's not on the ballot.
It poses a little bit of a challenge. But, I mean, honestly,
I should laugh, but it is funny.
If you're only going to be, a special election only covers until the end of this year, as you said.
Sure.
So
yeah.
he gets, you know, a few
just
weeks.
More time to really load up.
A few weeks later, 8 weeks later, he gets another chance at it.
Yes.
So that's good.
So if he really campaigns super well, someone could win the runoff on June 5th, become the assembly member for the rest of 2018, and totally lose out on the primary. So they would just be a lame duck assembly member as soon as they showed up.
As soon as they walked. Would they even go to Sacramento? Would you even
say,
bother?
What's the point? Like, they definitely wouldn't move.
No.
Like, they wouldn't bring any of their stuff. Steve Dunwoody didn't get on the ballot because a couple of things went wrong. I think, like, some problem with a deadline. And also, they have a very interesting rule where you have to submit a certain number of signatures to get on the ballot from people who live in the district.
Right.
You have to get at least 40 signatures. Doesn't seem like very many.
Right.
But you can't submit more than 60.
Yes. It's like electoral shuffleboard where you can't, if you go too far, you go off the end of the table. 60 is the max for some reason.
Yeah. What do they do if you submit more than 60? Are you
disqualified? I have no idea. That seems unlikely, but I don't know.
Yeah.
They just have a little... They just dump them in the trash as soon as you leave the office. I have no clue.
And so he submitted 54 of them, and 15 were declared inadmissible.
Right.
So he ended up with 39 of the 40 signatures that he needed. And these can be declared in, like, if somebody wrote down one address and then moved or mm-hmm. something like that, or, you know, you couldn't read their name or something. There are all kinds of reasons
so
that these things don't
my
work.
Question, besides why would you have this system in the first place, is if you do know that you're a candidate and you have this system, don't you really go to your, like, 50? Just pick 50.
50 that you know are just bulletproof.
Bulletproof signatures, yes.
Yeah.
How much would you really... mess around? I don't know. I have no idea what this process is like, but if I needed 50 golden, never going to be questioned signatures, I guess I would put more of a premium on doing that.
But look, now he's learned this great lesson. I'm guessing it's not going to happen when he has to, like, get on the ballot for the actual election, for 19 and 20 on June 5th. So
God, it couldn't happen twice, right? We'll be back here in a couple weeks to let you know.
A much worse version would be if he only got on the special election now,
right?
And then did and then made this mistake for the real election on June 5th. That would not be so good.
Yeah, that would be terrible. Do you have to redo this if you're an incumbent in order to be?
Wow. Oh yeah. I mean, I guess.
I don't know.
You're not an incumbent. It's like a different election. It's a completely different election.
It's a different election. You have the incumbency of, you know, a fortnight.
So stupid. What a stupid thing. Next district, Assembly District 45. This is the West Valley. Encino, Calabasas, West Hills, Woodland Hills, Tarzana, Reseda, Northridge.
Rich people.
Very rich people. Yes. This is the former occupant, the former assembly member of this district was Matt DeBabne, who stopped being an assembly member.
Very suddenly.
After he, well, not as suddenly as it probably should have been given what he did.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that.
I guess you could say there was a certain moment at which it was inevitable that he, let's declare the moment that it was inevitable that he was not going to be an assembly member anymore. Here's what he did. He went to Las Vegas for a wedding.
Okay.
And a bunch of lobbyists were there.
Right.
Because these guys are all in Sacramento. They're all friends with each other.
Gamble together.
Yep. He followed a lobbyist into a restroom, presumably a woman's restroom.
Mm-hmm.
He took out his penis. This, I think, is the moment.
That's the... Okay, I would say you could even go as far as... following a woman into the women's restroom. Okay.
Well, what if it's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, yeah.
And then just going back out.
Okay, so you do need the extra context of this is not an accident.
Yes.
Here's my penis.
Yes.
It's out.
Yes. Okay. And now I think at that point you're not
now you can
a member
say,
of
the yeah,
state
you shouldn't have come
anymore.
Into the women's restroom.
Yes. As if his objective was still unclear at this point, he told the woman to touch it.
Right.
She declined, so he masturbated and ejaculated into the toilet.
Yeah.
And then right after that, he said, I can't believe I just did that.
But so here's what I don't know from having read the account in the LA Times is what is the emphasis there? Like, what is his tone when he's saying, I can't believe I just... I
oh,
can't believe
wow.
I just did that? Or like, is it genuine surprise?
Yeah.
Is it disgust with himself?
Okay.
Is it kind of like conspiratorial? Like, I can't believe I just, you know.
Yeah.
Not that it changes anything whatsoever, but I just want to know. And reading it in print didn't give me, I was just kind of baffled as I was reading that. Like, what is he trying to convey here? It's only baffling to me
sure.
as somebody reading it. And I can only imagine how horrifying it was to live through Matt DeBabne's moment of clarity there. But
wait, for the woman.
For the woman who yes. had to... Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Not for... I don't care about him.
Sure.
He can be confused
and any,
all he wants.
Any, like, brush with conscience he might have had, right after he said that, he said, do not tell anyone about this.
Oh,
that this happened.
Yeah, yeah. No, there was no
I'm
real.
So embarrassed.
Can you believe? Yeah, classic Matt.
The worst version of "I can't believe I just did that" is that he is so indignant that she wouldn't touch his penis that he's saying like, "I can't believe I just
that's
worst.
Another spin on the
yes.
way you could deliver that.
Yes.
I can't believe I just did that.
Yes.
So speaking of classic Matt, though, there are some other things I think that you have that he
oh yeah
engaged
oh he
in.
Well, as soon as this happened, other women emerged to accuse him of all manner of sexual misconduct, including basically rape, for whatever, like, they weren't classifying it as rape in the paper,
right?
But he forced himself on a woman who he had dated before. He had non-consensual sex with her multiple times, which is rape,
which
that's
is
another
rape.
Word for
yeah
rape.
I think this is something that's starting to really
bother me as we get deeper into the Me Too coverage is that I think that the papers, in a sense of wanting to like cover their bases about like what is sexual misconduct,
they're
just putting everything under this term misconduct.
Yes.
Where it's like, if you're okay, so they actually lay it out pretty clearly. He had sex, consensual sex, once with a woman,
yeah,
who then subsequently said, "I don't want to have sex with you."
Yes.
And he forced himself on her and raped. Like, that's not,
yes,
that's not misconduct. There's a word for that already.
Right.
It works fine. It's rape. So that is what the allegation is against him from, I think, prior to his term in office. I think that one predates his time,
yeah,
in the legislature. But yeah, so anyway, there were a ton of women that I think you can substantially say there were just a lot of accusations that he has behaved in really disgusting ways.
Yeah.
And
he has admitted to none of them at this point.
Right.
But he did eventually finally resign. For a while, he was saying he wouldn't, that he wouldn't resign.
The facts would, you know, they would definitely show that he was clearly innocent, I think, is the gist of what he said.
Yes,
in his letter.
If we were to just wait for the investigation, I would be proven innocent.
But we're not going to do
but
that.
But you guys are such dicks, is basically,
yeah,
is basically,
right,
what it said. What a lot of these letters say is some variation on, like, the political climate now,
right,
is such that nobody can get a fair trial. So I'm not even going to try, even though I would be exonerated.
I think, too, like, he resigned after the forcible masturbation in public. He announced that he was going to resign. But
oh, okay.
Prior to his actual resignation, then other accusations started coming forward. So he had already put forward this resignation letter that said exactly what we said. I didn't do any of this, and the facts would show me to be innocent. And then other accusations started coming in, including the accusations of rape. And he said the exact same thing. It was like, like, just retroactively apply my resignation letter to all of these other accusations.
Yeah. It's almost like that's what he was trying to do by resigning. And now he's basically saying to these new women, like, hey, I already have given
my statement.
Yes. So he's gone. The front runner for his seat is Jesse Gabriel, who's a constitutional lawyer. He's suing the Trump administration on behalf of the Dreamers. He's a very recent resident of this district. He lived in Santa Monica for a long time, but he moved to Encino last year. He's another, you know, straightforward mainline Democrat, basically,
right,
I think.
Does he have the endorsement? Do you know?
He did not get it.
You need 60%.
There are a lot of people running in this district.
Okay.
It's very hard, I think, to get,
especially in an open field like
the Democratic Party endorsement.
Right.
But I would say that he is that he has a very good shot to win.
I would agree with that. Yeah. So, I mean, he has essentially the inside track there. I don't know a ton about his suit that he's doing right now, but
yeah,
couldn't hurt.
Especially, no,
I mean, it never hurts in LA to be like, I'm suing the Trump administration,
sure,
for anything.
Can I do that?
Yeah, right?
Is it like, how is that hard to do? There's another guy named Ankur Patel, who's like a community activist who's worked in education stuff. He is the farther left candidate,
right.
Medicare for All.
It's so interesting to me that is like that's the dividing line. Like I said,
I know.
We're one party state, so we have to kind of create these little fault lines.
Yeah.
And Medicare for All is a big one right now.
I guess, but Gavin Newsom is running on that.
And he's running to the left of Villaraigosa, because Villaraigosa,
I know, but
is saying,
like, but it's just weird to think of Gavin Newsom. Yeah, I know. Villaraigosa does not want universal health care.
Right. This is like the only difference you will find between Democratic candidates these days, apparently.
Yeah.
For or against.
But it's
Medicare
weird to think of Gavin Newsom as the leftist.
The furthest left. But yeah, I mean, as far as the mainstream candidates, he's, I guess, the I agree. It's kind of strange to me that there's not anyone further left than him. But then again, it's also the California governor's race. It's got to be one of the most expensive campaigns to run in the entire country, I would imagine.
Sure. Next district, Assembly District 39. This is the Northeast Valley. Your Sylmars, Pacoima, Sunland Tahunga, Sun Valley, like, and a little part of North Hollywood. But this is like more suburban. The former occupant of this assembly seat was Raul Bocanegra. He molested, harassed at least 7 women in a million different ways. It seems like the place where he focused most of his energy was at a club in Sacramento called Mix, which this whole thing is also just a referendum on Sacramento in general and just what kind of a gross
place it is. Are you talking about Mix?
Just like, okay, just that there's this one club. There's no like downtown LA club where all the like council members go after work and like right. loosen their ties and like get like loaded.
True.
And just like rub up on each other. In Sacramento, I think there's just like so little to do. Everyone goes to club.
It does just kind of seem like a really gross sort of kegger just going on in downtown Sacramento all the time.
And one of the things where he molested somebody was at the house of Felipe Fuentes, his former boss, who also used to be
a city council member before he left to become a lobbyist.
Yes. He didn't decide he wasn't going to run again to become a lobbyist. He said, "Today, in the middle of my term, I am a lobbyist now."
So Los Angeles has very, very powerful city council members. And they, like I said, they get compensated very well. I think their salary is like $180,000 a year or mm-hmm. whatever. They have almost unchecked power over everybody who lives in their district. And just like the thought that somebody could have that job and just be like, you know what? Today, I'm done being a city council member because I just got offered this lobbyist position and all of my constituents, you know, you're on your own.
Yeah.
See you. You'll have another council member, but not for a year and a half. Goodbye. It still kind of blows my mind.
You know what I wonder, though? Just as you said that.
What?
Imagine if that had happened today, what would you think?
Oh, yeah. That right? There was something untoward.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
So maybe it was a proto Me Too thing. And
see,
maybe it was this.
Okay. What?
Maybe it was Raul Bocanegra who was became an assemblyman, but he was his chief of staff or whatever. And Felipe Fuentes, this stuff was happening at his house. These women complained to Felipe Fuentes.
Okay, but that doesn't line up because, wait, didn't you say Felipe Fuentes hosted one of these parties that Bocanegra was then doing this at that party?
Yes, but he did. But that was when Bocanegra was Felipe Fuentes' chief of staff.
Oh.
When Felipe Fuentes...
Oh, that was here in L.A. That wasn't
I think it was in Sacramento.
Club Mix. Okay.
When Felipe Fuentes was an assemblyman.
Oh, okay. I totally lost the thread there. Okay,
I'm
yeah.
sure the people listening are having a very easy time.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that would be something that I would have... if that happened today, I would definitely think there was something going on there. I don't know. I feel like these people have acted with... Not just in politics, but just obviously in circles of power everywhere in the country, have acted with such impunity for so long. It's kind of hard for me to believe that Felipe Fuentes was like, "Yeah, I'm going to go take a higher paying job," in order to dodge scandal. But
yeah, it does kind probably of, just that they offered him.
It does kind of cast that shadow, though.
Right,
you're just kind of like wondering what's happening with all of our elected officials.
Sure, and if the Bocanegra thing had come out today. And Felipe Fuentes was still city councilman, which he would be if he had decided to run again. They always win re-election, basically.
Absolutely.
People would have said, "Oh, so these women complained to you, Felipe Fuentes, about this guy, Raul Bocanegra, and you didn't do anything, and you kept his job. You endorsed him for assembly, and he's assemblyman now? Like, what's going on there?"
Right.
It wouldn't be good. He might have to leave his job.
He might have to leave.
it's pretty bad.
To your other point, though, about city council members, you know what the incumbency rate is? It's like...
No.
I'm pretty sure as far as non-incumbents beating an actual incumbent running, it's, I think, twice in the past I want to say 300 races. So we have 15 council districts.
God.
They run every 4 years. Yeah.
Wow.
It's been maybe 2 in 20 years, something like that.
Well, anytime a challenger even gets to a runoff, people lose their shit.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh my God, right. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's like a total breakdown. They're like, man, this city council member only got 47% of the vote. He must be. Everybody hates him.
Yes. The front runner for the assembly seat is Luz Rivas. She got the Democratic Party endorsement. She used to be an engineer at Motorola. She has worked in science education for girls primarily. She was a commissioner for LA Public Works. She seems like a totally nice person. This one is fairly wide open, though, I think. I mean, I'm not even sure if she's the front runner. She just got that fairly important endorsement. But there's Patty Lopez is running. She had this seat from 2014 to 2016.
And that was like she was the incumbent or lost to Bocanegra.
She beat Bocanegra first.
Okay, and then lost.
And then lost to him.
And now is at back at
and
it
now
again.
Is trying to get in there again.
Okay. So she has the name recognition in the district probably.
Yeah. Sure.
Maybe. I mean, maybe.
I mean, you know, as much as you can for running for assembly. Antonio Sanchez is like a labor. He's going to have all the labor endorsements. He does a lot of union stuff. There's a Republican. This is not as Democratic a district as some of the others in LA. So, yeah, a lot of stuff could happen here. There's also a documentary filmmaker who's I looked up some of her stuff, and there's a video that's all about the last office. She runs for a lot of different things, but it was a video all about protecting the electric grid from terrorism. And that's what she's running. That's her like main plank, basically.
That's her main plank. And yes. I want to know what is the concern there? What's happening with the electric grid?
Well, if you would watch
the documentary,
you would find out that ISIS right now could access our electric grid and basically shut down civilization as we know it.
ISIS, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I hear they're big on that. Municipal electric grids.
Yeah.
Municipal utilities are what they're gunning for.
Right. So why kill us when they can shut down our electric grid and we'll all eat each other, basically, is what this woman seems to think will happen.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a fair point.
It's a compelling, and I don't see all the other candidates in this district have been dodging this issue.
Oh yeah. It's not something that you're going to hear the fat cats in Sacramento talking about.
Yeah.
So
they're scared to confront it.
I'm glad that somebody is bringing that realness.
Those are the three special elections going on now. Look forward to also Tony Mendoza being replaced, the state senator from Southern California who molested and harassed multiple women. That's an extra exciting one, the race to replace Tony Mendoza, because Tony Mendoza will be running in that race.
Yeah, that is one of the truly wild developments of the most recent weekend where the Democratic caucus gave all of their endorsements was that Tony Mendoza was there. He was expecting to be expelled from the legislature and instead resigned and then showed up to the Democratic caucus weekend anyway, kind of just like, hey, I'm still here. If you thought you were getting rid of me, I'm running for my own seat that I have not even vacated yet.
Yeah, that I just resigned from today.
Under threat of expulsion. Yeah, so that's really crazy. He represents a district in Southeast LA that has Artesia, I think parts of Whittier as well. So very interested to see what happens there. But he kind of has intimated or made subtle, I don't know, hints at the fact that he thinks that this was the result of some kind of personal grudges. He felt like De Leon, Kevin De Leon, the president pro tem formerly of the state Senate before he left to run for Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat, kind of just wanted him out. So, so he's, I don't know, a wild card, I guess, in his own race, in his own special election race to replace him.
And there's also Christina Garcia, who I forget what her... she's also in Southern California, but I forget what her district is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what her district is either off the top of my
head. But she got the Democratic Party endorsement, despite that she has also been accused of sexual misconduct against a male staff member.
Yeah, so she actually, this is, I mean, the interesting thing about this to me is that she has been one of the leading voices of the fight to rid the state legislature of sexual harassment.
Yeah, so her and Laura Friedman have really been
The big ones. Laura Friedman, my assemblywoman, who's, I think, fantastic.
Yep, and she's great.
I hope has not been hosting secret games of spin the bottle with her staffers as Christina Garcia has been doing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, not a great choice.
I know.
As far as, again, so this is... They didn't have to teach me this necessarily. I came in with this intuition, but when I was studying public administration, it was kind of like, you know, don't put your staffers in a position where you're encouraging them to just make out with each other in front of you. That's...
But they did say that to you in school?
No. They were kind of hoping.
I thought you were saying that they didn't have to teach me this, but that we did have like a couple days.
Yeah, we did. We did actually have HR training where they were just like, don't be this fucking stupid. Just don't do this.
So, but she doesn't appear to be suffering the same kind of pushback as the other.
Christina Garcia is also Southeast LA, Bell Gardens, Bell, that area.
But so. She was the assembly member of part of Tony Mendoza's district. Probably.
Right. And Tony Mendoza in the Senate, yes.
Right. So we'll all look forward to that on June 5th. The special election is on April 3rd if you live in any of the districts that we talked about. Thank you for listening to the show. We're going to do so much more stuff. We're going to talk about housing and homeless stuff. We're going to talk about all kind of like city politics. We're going to have guests.
We can talk about the gang injunctions.
Gang injunctions, police shootings, like all the juicy stuff that people want to hear. What's your Twitter?
My Twitter is at SAFrazy. That's
but
terrible.
It's not pronounceable. You might have to change it.
Yeah, I might have to.
Because it's Frazier, so it's like Frazier.
I think I originally made S-A it so that
Frazier without the R.
I think I originally made it so people couldn't find me.
Cool. It's working.
It's working.
SAFRAZIE.
That's right.
Thank you for listening to the show. We will be back next week. Bye. Thanks.